sad because he was no longer here. He'd fought a battle with cancer and had kind of gone downhill quite severely at the end. But it was joyous because we were celebrating in the fact that we knew where he'd gone, that he knew Jesus. And so it was one of those kind of strange occasions because you're not quite sure how to react. Because there's that moment where there is that sorrow, and particularly for the family and close friends, but also that sense of we know that he is now in eternity with Jesus. He is living the ultimate life better than any of us. And this particular gentleman, he was in his late 70s, I think, when he passed away. He was someone who I'd known for a number of years. And when I first started preaching, he was a real encouragement to me. Would often write to me when I was at Bible college, offering me input and thoughts and different kind of ideas. And even the last time that I saw him, I preached at the church where he was a member back in November 2014. I can still now picture him running after me as I kind of left the premises, heading to the van, with his stick kind of hobbling along, running after me to catch me. On the one hand, to kind of encourage me to maybe say, you could maybe do this a bit differently because it will possibly, you know, improve what you're doing. But also to share with me a message, idea that he'd had, which he was going to develop, and he thought maybe it's something I could develop. He was always wanting to encourage and support. And it was a wonderful person to know. And as I sat in this funeral, kind of hearing the different things talked about in terms of who he was, and again, it was one of those occasions, you may have had a similar yourself, where you suddenly discover things about a person that you never knew. The things that he'd done, the places he'd been, and that sort of thing. And I had this thought that went through my head as kind of, I wonder what people will say about me when kind of that occasion potentially happens, hopefully a long time from now. You know, when maybe people gather because Ed Jones is no longer on this mortal coil. And they gather around and they share the stories, you know, what they remember, what they will remember him for. And as I sat there, it made me think, kind of, what will I be remembered for? What is it that, you know, we hope one day people will talk about and chat about and share about us because of the lives that we've lived? What are the things that we hope will be lasting? And in many ways, it leads me to this whole kind of thing of what legacy will we leave behind? What is it maybe that we maybe something we've thought about a lot, maybe it's something we haven't thought about at all. It's interesting, Phil referenced this morning and being aware that your series in January, looking at resolutions rather than self-improvement, world improvement. Actually, rather than kind of just making a difference myself, but actually, how can I better the world around me? How can I make a difference in the lives of those around me, in the community that I'm a part of, the neighbourhood that I live in, the street that I wake up on each morning? How can I actually impart something of Jesus into their lives? Linked to that, though, there's this whole danger, isn't it, of kind of, you know, what legacy will I leave behind? What is it that I'm going to achieve? Because often that's the mindset many people have. What am I going to get out of life? And what will my name be remembered for? And so instead of this whole idea of what legacy are we kind of going to leave behind, I'd want to pose this morning this whole question of what is it that we're actually living as a legacy? What is it as believers, as followers, as friends of Jesus, as part of the church? What is the legacy that we are living from today into tomorrow, throughout this week? Not thinking about what's going to be kind of left from the moment that we leave this place, but right now. And today I want us to reflect on the whole focus, particularly thinking about children, those within our midst who we can just about hear, who've headed through to their activities. But again, those that are part of the local schools within this town. Those that maybe kind of, you know, make a lot of noise very early in the morning in the house next door to you. Or you kind of see causing their parents grief on the way to school because they're just dawdling behind or whatever. What legacy are we going to live in their lives starting today? If we look in the passage of Psalm 78, it's a passage that I've read many times. Verses within it were very key when Arise began. Arise began back in 2007 the ministry that I've been working for. An organisation called Vis-a-Vis Ministries and the Girls Brigade, the England and Wales, came together and formed this ministry with this vision of equipping the church to reach a generation. And these verses were some of the verses they really felt God was speaking to them through, saying this is something that you need to be grappling with. This is something you need to be taking hold of and doing something about, supporting the local church to make a difference in the lives of children within their communities. As I say, if you look at these verses, just initially the first eight that Phil read, Asaph, the poet or prophet who was writing, there's always this question, is he crying out to the people? Is he kind of offering them this sense of this is something you need to grasp, or this is something that would be good for you to consider, or if you have a bit of time, could you kind of bear this all kind of in mind? See, if you actually look through verse 1, my people, hear my teaching, listen to the words of my mouth. It's not a kind of, if you have nothing better to do, then guys, it'd be really great if you could just listen up, quieten down and hear what I've got to say here. It's not a case of, you know, if you're interested in this sort of thing, then if you'd like to gather in this corner of the room, we're going to have a little chat about this. The rest of you don't worry about it. It says, hear my teaching. Listen to these words. You know, there's a sense of obedience is important here. Because what I'm about to say, it's not just something superficial. It's not just something kind of for those who are interested, but that is essential for you to grasp. He goes on. He says, you know, I'm going to remind, verses 2 and 3, he's almost, I'm going to remind you of what you know. I'm going to remind you of the things that have happened, of what has gone on before. And then in verse 4, he says, you know, we will not hide them, talking about the truths of God from their descendants. We will tell the next generation, the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, his power and the wonders he has done. He's basically saying that we need to communicate, we need to share what God has done with those who are coming on after us. And we mustn't just kind of leave it until some point in the future when they can sit still long enough and be quiet enough and do exactly what we think they should do. But actually, we need to be telling them now, because we can't wait. He goes on, verses 5 through to verse 7. You know, he's saying this is not just, we're doing this because it's, well, this part of the series that we're going through. So the next month, this is our focus. Or because this is kind of the bee in my bonnet, and I'm at the front, so you've got to listen to me. But because this is essential. Verse 7, he says, then they would put their trust in God, would not forget his deeds, but would keep his commandments. We need to communicate these truths, he's saying, so that they actually see the true path that is ahead of them. They see the potential of who they've been created to be and can live their lives in all their fullness. And then if you read, and I'd really encourage you to read the rest of the psalm later on. What Asaph does is he goes through and he shares the bigger story of what they need to be communicating. The bigger story of what has gone before. But also this sense of kind of how God's people have kind of, you know, drawn close at some points, but then decided to do their own thing and have walked their own path. And then they've at times, again, kind of got close to God, but again, have done their own thing. And this need to communicate the truths of God, because people need to grasp this. It's not about waiting until such time as it fits or suits, but actually we need to be telling the next generation, he says. He's pointing in many ways, I think, to this need for us to live as his disciples. And that's not something that is just for those who are 18, or those who have been to Bible college, or those who know really long biblical words and can kind of read certain passages of the Bible and not trip over certain of the names because we're not quite sure how they're pronounced or anything. But every single one of us needs to discover Jesus. Every single one of us needs to live as his disciples. That's how we were created. We were intended to be. And it's at this point that Asaph is getting at. And it's, again, not presenting some thing, kind of, well, if you fancy it, or if you're free, or if this is really your thing. But every single one of you who hears this, he says, needs to grasp it. And needs to kind of, in my words, consider the legacy that you are living right now. Consider the difference that you are making today, tomorrow, Tuesday, and so on and so on. And so, initially, I think for us, there is that call for us to tell the next generation. And to ask that question, how am I playing my part in ensuring that the next generation hear the truths of God? Over the years, the 6.5 years that I've been with Arise, I've had many great kind of privileged opportunities to work in different situations, to travel all over the country and beyond. Some of them are a bit more random and bizarre, you know, kind of turning up at people's houses at 10:30 at night because they've offered to put you up because you've done an event nearby and you've never met them before and you're just welcomed in and you have no idea who they are. There's those sorts of things that are a bit odd, but you roll with it. But there are some moments that just take your breath away. A couple of years ago, I was involved in an event, and I use the word privilege because it was. I had the privilege of standing up in front of 400 children who gathered at this event and sharing God's story, sharing the gospel with them. And in the kind of the 7 minutes, just presenting to them what I believe the story of God is all about, and how God loves them, God created them, God longs to know them, and God wants them to follow him and be his friend. Because that's what it's about. Ultimately, it's about us ensuring that we're going to tell the next generation the truth of God. Making sure that we're communicating the things that they need to know. There is that question that kind of streams to my mind, though, is, do we actually know the truth of God? Because we can't actually communicate stuff that we don't know ourselves. I'll give you an example. The three children that Emma and I are blessed with, Evie, our eldest daughter, always want to get involved in the kitchen. She always loves to kind of see what's going on and help out and that sort of thing. And I can instruct her kind of how to make a shepherd's pie. And I think I could do quite a mean shepherd's pie. I can do spaghetti bolognese. Some might say it's just shepherd's pie without the potato on, but it's completely different, trust me. I can instruct her how to do most things that require coming out of the freezer and putting in the oven, again, that sort of thing, and one or two other things. But I can only communicate and share with her the things that I know how to make myself. I can't say to her, well, we're going to make some kind of cock-a-van thing, because I have no idea, it's not chicken or anything. But beyond that, I've got no idea. I love eating it, I do. But where I'd start making it, that's why you go ask Emma and my wife, and I say, what do I do with this, and do I need to have this in here, and that sort of thing. And if we're going to tell the next generation, if we're actually saying, no, we need to communicate the truth of God, then we need to make sure that we know the truth of God. That our own lives, our own discipleship, our own journey is one of being filled, one of growth, and one of seeking to learn everything we can. Recognising that none of us have reached that point where we know everything and we have all the answers and there's nothing else to learn. But actually we're seeking to grow and develop constantly. Saying, how are we on that journey of discipleship, wherever we find ourselves, but seeking to move forward, seeking to grow step by step. If you look in this passage, obviously Asaph is writing pre-Jesus, isn't he? I love kind of thinking about the Old Testament writers, because a lot of what they wrote, they get so excited and animated. And you imagine how excited and animated they'd be if they'd written it kind of a few hundred years later, some of them. In light of all that happened when Jesus came, and all we read about in the Gospels, you know, the fact that he died, he rose again. And suddenly what Asaph is writing here and getting excited about just be blown out of all proportion. Sometimes we need to grasp them about that. Actually, this is such an opportunity, such a privilege, and something we need to take seriously in terms of how we're telling the next generation the truths of God. But also, not just to tell them, but so that they know the truths of God. We need to tell them, but they need to know them. We're at an event a while back, and we were asking the gathered children, we said, have you got a favourite Bible story? Is there any, what comes to mind? And just often we'll do these kind of questions, really just trying to get them engaged, and very much on a very simple level, so just trying to get to them, because often we'll go and work in a situation where I've never met them before, and I'll probably never meet them again. And so we were just chatting, I remember a small group of us, which went, what's your favourite Bible story? Which bits do you like? And this one lad, he jumped his hand and said, I've got one. So I love Samson. Samson's just the most amazing character. He said, brilliant, I love Samson. And we chatted, and the other kids and that thing. And as I was reflecting about afterwards, you think, Samson's an interesting character to pick, if you think about it. Yes, you know, Samson did some amazing things. He was strong and was really blessed by God. But actually, Samson got a bit arrogant. And Samson kind of went off on his own track. And Samson actually got his kind of eyes gouged out and all this sort of stuff at the end of it as well. But for this lad, this image of Samson was just the most amazing character in the Bible. And it struck me that I think sometimes we need to remember that the truths of God are not to be put up there alongside Red Riding Hood or whatever it is else that children are reading at school, fairy tales and that sort of thing. But there's something different. There's something a level, well, much more than just a level above. And as we seek to tell the next generation, we need to recognise actually the importance of what we're communicating, because we don't just want them to learn it. We don't just want them to have a load of head knowledge so they can recount various stats and statistics and names and so they can pronounce all the random Bible passages when we even can't. Because if they can do that, but actually it doesn't mean anything to them, then it's pointless. So then how are we going to help them to know the truths of God? How are we going to help them getting into the Bible, realising the difference that it can make and the difference that it needs to make in their life? One of the initiatives that Arise has been involved in over the last few years has been something called Limitless, mobilising children to share their faith. And the format of it has been gathering with a group of children over a weekend, and we've usually gone to their local kind of community, their church, and do various activities over the weekend, that sort of thing, looking at this whole idea of how they can share their faith. And there was this one girl called Emily who came to one of these weekends. And kind of after a few weeks, the story kind of filtered back that we'd done this weekend. And she hadn't actually wanted to come to the weekend. And she'd never stayed away from home. We didn't discover this until she turned up on the Friday night. And we were like, oh, great. She'd never stayed away from home. Didn't even want to stay at her grandparents, apparently. You know, that was the limit, that she didn't want to stay away from her parents. And all weekend she's been very quiet, hadn't really kind of been that animated and that sort of thing. But we got through it sort of thing. And a few weeks later I'd heard that the Tuesday afterwards, she'd invited one of her friends to the after school club that the church ran. And the following week she'd invite another friend to the after school club that the church ran. And the story came up from her mother that she was just got so excited about what she had grasped over this weekend of the truth that actually Jesus loved her friends, he came for all of them, and that she needed to share that with them, that she wanted to invite them. And it was that moment of thinking actually something had clicked and she grasped that these weren't just stories, but actually they were something that needed to make a difference in her life and in the lives of those around her. Now the danger with looking at a passage like this, I'm very aware, and inviting someone like me to come and speak, is that you could sit there and you could kind of go, oh, I've seen this before. This is one of those Sundays when secretly they're just after more volunteers to work amongst the children. Okay, that's what this all is. Okay, and secretly we'll get someone else in, because then at the end of the sermon, they'll slot that in, and we'll all then just have to kind of be thrown with it, sort of thing. Or you might be sitting there thinking, I've seen this before. This is one of those Dragon Den style pictures, you know. This week it's children, next week it's going to be elderly, and then the other week it's going to be anyone who doesn't fit into those two categories. And you're going to have to kind of pick, aren't you, which one are you going to go for? And you're going to have to choose something. Or you think, I've seen this before. This is, you know, every 2 years this happens, isn't it? We get someone turn up and they bang on about this sort of thing. But then they'll be gone. It's all right. And we won't have to wait for another 2 years and we can just ignore it and that sort of stuff. Or maybe you think, oh no, this is that one sermon that all those who've gone out and are now looking after and working amongst the children, they should be here and this is for them. Because I'm in here, this is not for me, you know, because I'd be out there if this is for me and all that. The challenge is then, how am I going to respond to what I believe God sets before every single one of us as part of the church? I remember there was a couple in the church that Emma and I were a part of before I moved to Arise when I was a pastor down in Bexhill in East Sussex. And there were a couple in their late 70s when we moved into the area. And throughout the 5 years that we were there, they never once were part of any organised children's activity. They never once prepared any craft activities. They never once, you know, did anything face-to-face with children. But I would say they were a valued asset and part of the children's team in that church. Because every time I went and met with them, the thing they'd want to know about was, how are things going? How, you know, things, and not just kind of, you know, that thing where you have to just recount the same stories over again, and they haven't really kind of paid any attention each time. But they'd pick up on what I said last time I came and visited. They want to find out, okay, how has this developed? And how about that group? And what about this situation? Because they were praying for us. And they recognised that that was their role. They physically, quite legitimately, couldn't do anything else. They were fairly housebound, really. But they realised that the ministry that we were delivering and were a part of amongst children was essential. And that they were part of that amongst the church. So it's saying, how can we, each of us, seek God for the part that we should play? And I want to suggest five different kind of actions that we could consider. Five things maybe that God could be saying to us as to how we can play our part in living a legacy amongst the children that are already part of this church family, but are also part of the wider community. I think initially, invest. How could we invest our time? And not just on a Sunday, not just leading a group, but actually, how can we invest in the lives of the children and the young people who gather here on a Sunday? How can we kind of just be welcoming? How can we communicate to them? How can we seek to give and inquire? What are the needs that they may have? And the needs of the activity? How can we have on our agenda that, yeah, okay, they're out of sight, but they're not out of mind, and actually they're a valid and valued part of this family, and how can we support the work that's going on right now as we sit in here, and goes on at other times and in other ways. So how can we invest? How can we protect? It's a danger sometimes that I think we can almost shield, and want to shield the children into almost a cocoon. We want to keep them safe from the world. So we, you know, we don't want them to, you know, hear things or watch things or engage in things that are going to be unhelpful. The reality is they're going to have all those things fired at them as they grow up. But how can we protect them by being a place and a space and individuals that actually they feel safe in? So actually they feel they can come here and gather here on a Sunday, and actually the relationships that they've built up are ones that actually say, no, this is a safe place. And actually, these people who stay in here for the boring bit, while we go out and make a lot of noise and have a lot more fun, actually are interested in us. And they want to take care of us. And they are kind of valuing us. How are we going to inspire them? How are we going to invest in them? How are we going to protect them? How are we going to inspire them? I'll never forget, sitting in the church that we're a part of, about 4 years ago, and it's suddenly clicking and dawning on me the number of parents who are telling their children to shh because they're making too much noise. Because there is that thing, kind of, yeah, those times we need to be quiet, and you need to shh, you're embarrassing me. And as a parent, I feel that now, because you feel everyone is looking at you. because obviously your child is the noisiest child that there has ever been in any church gathering, you know, irrelevant of whatever has gone before. Yours is the most outrageous and is causing the most disruption, and you just want the ground to swallow you up. How, as a church, can we support them? How can we welcome them? How can we just engage with them and again, inspire them? Actually, they may see us and go, actually, I want to be like them when I grow up. I want to live a life that is, you know, that's someone who is following Jesus, who is worshipping God. You know, they don't turn up on a Sunday and just kind of mumble through and just kind of then head off. But actually, they're really engaging. That's, wow, I want some of that. How can we release within them? How can we celebrate the gifts that they have? How can we say, actually, you know, God has blessed you right now. How can we see each one of them as the unique and special gift that they are? Go back to that list of things we worked through earlier on. How can we actually say, no, we want to release you. We want to look for those opportunities. If I'm involved in the music, if I'm involved being, you know, doing the tea and coffee, if I'm involved doing different things, and actually there's a child or someone who's interested, how can I look to release that? And how can I look to, okay, well, how can you get involved? You know, rather than just go, well, obviously this will not work because of health and safety and all the other reasons that we put up, but actually, no, how can I actually help to see what God has blessed you with and see it nurtured and released? And how can we pray for them? You know, I put up fifth, because that's what we do, isn't it? Prayer is the last thing that we kind of tack on. It's the thing that we squeeze in the 5 minutes that's left of our meetings and that sort of thing. It's the bit that if you don't really know what to do, well, we'll pray, because it's kind of our last option, really. But how can we actually pray for the children that are initially here amongst us? You know, and pray purposefully. So, what are their names? What schools do they go to? What years are they in? What things do they enjoy? You know, how can I actually be praying for them? How can I pray for their families? But also, how can I be praying for them in the wider context? So if you know, you know, the situation where you live, you know, the street that you're based, where's the nearest school? What are some of the challenges maybe going on there? How can you find out? How you go on their website? Just see what's going on. There'll be information and news and bits and pieces. But how can you find out and pray? But again, not as in it's the last thought, but actually, I'm going to pray. We might say, well, actually, what opportunities do we have? I know there are some links with the church here. Well, actually, well, do we know what they are? What's some of the hopes? What are some of the things we actually were praying for breakthrough? Well, how are we going to pray for those opportunities amongst the children of this community? So that the legacy that we're living is not one that's just for many years when we're long gone, but actually right now we'll see God moving and making a difference. There's a friend of, again, my daughter Evie's, who about 3 years ago, the story of my wife was telling me, was afraid to go to sleep at night. She was afraid to go to sleep at night because the conversation had come up between her mum and dad, who both are atheists, don't believe in God at all. And their daughter had asked them, what happens when you die? And in this conversation, they said, well, you just kind of go to sleep, really, and that's it. And so she was genuinely petrified of going to sleep because she thought if she didn't wake up, well, you know, and she didn't want her parents to go to sleep. Because that's what you said happens when you die. I don't want you to die. And this little girl, who was about six at the time, was just terrified of going to bed. And as I heard that story, as a parent, it just upset me. Because you think, actually, that was that girl's world for that time, until she kind of got beyond it. But even then, she, I don't think, has really discovered kind of what ultimately happens. But this sense of actually, that's what they're being fed. There's a great clip, similarly, from a TV show of this girl on her spiritual journey. And she, in it, she, you know, she's burying this mouse in the garden. And she does this prayer. And this prayer includes all manner of kind of quotes from films and adverts. and her teddy bear's the Pope. And it's all done so seriously because, again, she's just grabbed all these bits and pieces, put them together, and to her, that is what it all means. And I think sometimes we need to just stop and take stock of the seriousness that actually, for many children in this community right now, well, the fact that we're here, they wouldn't even know that we are. They wouldn't even probably even recognise what this building is. Or God? Or that, oh, he's that word. That's that word that, you know, the dad uses when he's, you know, whacked his thumb with a hammer. And then it's added with some other words, which I won't repeat. You know, that's all it is. It's asking, what legacy will we live right now to make a difference in their lives starting today? Let's pray. God, I thank you for the truth that is your word. And I pray that the things that you have said this morning from it, that they will rest in our hearts, that you will stir within us a passion and a desire and a burden to play our part in sharing you with the children of this community, of where we find ourselves. I pray that you'll help us not to see it as someone else's task or see ourselves as not up to it, but to seek you as to what part you long for us to play. And I want to pray for the children of this fellowship, this family, and of this wider place, this community, Lord. I pray, Father, that you will move by your Spirit and will break into their lives, Lord. I pray for the opportunities to come within the local schools and that you will do something, Lord, that is so beyond what we may even dream possible, but because your heart for them is so great. And I pray you'll help us to rise to the challenge that you set before us. In your name we pray.